Alan Kring Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4 for Spring Semester 2017. Lecture 8, delivered on February 15, 2017. The title of this lecture is Applications of Interest Rate Theory.
Today, Applications of Interest Rate Theory. Suppose I have an imaginary dog. Now, this is a dog that is mostly white, but it has these round black circles on it. So, what do you suppose I call this dog?
A dog that has white blood?
It's okay. I have, what am I going to call this dog? Spot, exactly. Now, what does that have to do with finance? Not a lot right off the bat. Follow with me on this. Back in the day, when I did oil and gas exploration with a group of wildcatters, I learned the business and the terminology. This was down in Texas. Now, Texas, you know that in Texas there are no two-syllable words. Yeah, it's Texas. It's Dallas, Houston. It's not oil and gas, it's oil and gas. Okay? So, words are short and they have strong meaning. When we would pull oil from the ground, we would put it in reserve tanks. It wasn't in a pipeline going to a refinery. It was in reserve tanks. And then every once in a while, there'd be this truck that would come out, and it would take the oil and pay us for it. There were two ways you could get paid. One was you take whatever the prevailing price is for that grade of crude that's in your reserve, in your tanks, reserve tanks, okay? That's called spot. You take spot, or you could make an agreement for a predetermined amount of money per barrel that you would get every time the truck came out there for, let's say, 6 months. That would be what is called a forward contract. If I take spot, I, as the wildcatter, bear the risk of price volatility in the oil market. If I take forward, the risk is taken by the oil company that buys the oil from the wildcatters going around. The Coqueline truck comes out, and the risk is all theirs. If oil prices have collapsed, well, I've got that forward contract, so I've got my guaranteed rate. On the other hand, if oil prices skyrocket, if there's a forward contract, the oil company gets the benefit of it. Essentially, spot puts the risk on the seller, forward puts the risk on the buyer. Now, the term forward rate comes about all over the place in business and in finance, especially if you are talking about the risk component of business. You are very interested in forward, because what happens in the forward market, the pricing in the forward market, tells you a lot about where the market sentiment is. So, for example, if I am sitting down with the Coqueline people and they tell me right now that oil is running at, let's say, $42 a barrel for this sour crude that we're pulling. And the driver says to me, okay, we're going to work with you on a forward rate of 42.5 for the next 6 months. We'll buy all the oil that you have in those tanks every time we come out here for $42.50 a barrel. What would you think that would tell you about what the oil company thinks oil prices are going to do? Go up. Maybe even pretty strongly. There's always going to be that risk. Always going to be that risk. So they're going to cut you down. They're probably thinking oil prices are going to go up quite a bit. But they're going to offer you a little nudge. Now, if they offer me 37 and a quarter on the barrel, well, I'm going to call them all kinds of names that start with mother. Because it's 42 right now at spot, and you're trying to do 37 and a quarter on me, what the hell do you think? And that would probably mean that they are figuring that the prices are going to drop some considerable amount, a lot. So that they might be figuring that they're going to drop probably to 40, 39, maybe 38, okay? So in other words, when you look at a market, it's spot is important. There's no question about that. But looking at the forward rates that are forming through the market's dynamics of supply and demand and the information that all the different players have, that tells you what the market thinks is going to happen. Now, you would say, well, that's just what the market thinks is going to happen. Okay, you might know a lot more than the market. You might, I mean, but here's the thing. You get in, I was out on a boat way out in the ocean one day, and I had a bunch of drunk friends. I wasn't drunk because I was supposed to be the responsible adult. Damn that. But one of the drunk guys gets up on the back of the boat. His name was Zaz. And he's saying, I'm going to jump in. I'm going to jump in the blue ocean. And just as he said that, a hammerhead shark slid under the boat. I mean, this was like a monster. Freaking monster. Well, he was drunk, and he evacuated his bladder right there and then. And he didn't jump in. Because, you see, that shark was thinking, I will eat this drunken fool and I will get a nice little buzz off his liver. Now, the Zaz was thinking to himself, well, even if I fall in, I'm not going to let that shark eat me. Whose thinking is probably going to be the one you take into consideration?
Probably the shark.
You got it. That shark, he needed a mixed drink and Zaz was just the thing for him. Okay? The deal is this. If the market thinks it, you darn well better think you're God before you contradict the market, before you think you know more than what those market players are thinking. Now, I bring that up because the first thing that I'm going to show you is a way to see what the market thinks the future is going to be. I'm going to show you some math that you are probably not going to quite get why I'm doing what I'm doing. That's why I'm going to do it over and over until it gets to the point where you understand. But I don't expect you to understand this time the math that I use to get it done. You see, up here on this chart that I've put up, this is today's Treasury securities yield. Now, you got the 1, 3, 6 months. We're going to look at the 1 year, the 2 year, and the 3 year. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to tease out of these numbers something about the future, or at least what the market thinks the future in the relatively short to intermediate run looks like. You see, for a one-year T-bill, its price now times 1 plus its yield will equal $1,000. We've done this we did this the other way. A few weeks ago, I showed you how to do this. But I'm just showing you in this case that in this case, this Treasury bill yield, in order for us, and I'm just taking a stab at this, I'm thinking about $991 times 1 plus 0.0083 will equal 1,000. I'm thinking, why am I doing this? I can just do it on a calculator on here real quick. Calculator. 1,000 divided by 1.0083. Yeah, 991.77. Okay, that's where that yield they got up there. Apparently today, 1 year treasury bills were selling for $991.77. Now, don't worry about that. I mean, you would have seen it the other way. I would have had you calculate the yield, 1,000 divided by 991.77 minus 1. Okay, that's the 1 year yield. That's where they got that 1 year 0.83% from. It was just based on the price that the market is charging right now for a 1 year treasury bill. You could have gone and bought a 1 year treasury bill for this price. Okay, so now, for a 2 year, now the 2 year is a 1.21%. The way you would have done that one, I'm thinking that's about $976 times 1 plus 0.0121 to the second power equals 1,000. In other words, you would have to have a number of 1.21% in order to make a $976 treasury bill worth $1,000 in a year. Like I said, don't sweat this math too much right now. I'm not really that crazy for you to know it. Let me do it real quick here. I'm going to take 1,000 divided by 1.0121 squared. Yeah, 976.23. In other words, right now, if I went out and bought a 2 year treasury bill, I would pay about $976.77 for it. Now, that's how they get that 1.22. Oops, I did 1.21. That's how they got that number. They basically just said, all right, what are they selling for? $976. Okay, so in other words, what we'll do is we'll take 1,000 divided by 976.77 and then raise that to the 1/2 power. And that's how they got their number, minus 1. That's how they got this 1.22%, okay? The thing here, right here, is that what they calculated, that 1.22%, that is, I'll correct this, actually a composite rate. It's like an average. I have a lot of people say that they haven't been shown this, the difference between an arithmetic average and a geometric average. An arithmetic average, you add up numbers and then you divide by, like an average of two numbers, add the first number plus the second number divided by two. Geometric averages, which is what we do in business, especially in finance and in operations management too, we use a geometric average. Instead of the two numbers divided by two, it's the two numbers times each other to the 1/2 power. Those are much more nature works in geometric averages much more than it does in arithmetic averages. But anyway, in other words, $991.77 times 1 plus 0.0083 equals $1,000. That's how I got the first yield. That's why that's up there. Now the next one, did I write that? No, that's 23 cents. That's 23 cents, not 77. $976.23 times 1 plus 0.0122 times 1 plus 0.0122 equals $1,000. Okay? I'm getting to the end of this math, and again, I'm not really all that excited. I don't really care too much if you know, can repeat this math to me right now. They go through this in the book, but they kind of lightweight it, and I'm showing you how to get to the end zone quicker and showing you why we care about this. You see, because there's a problem with reporting a 1.22 yield. You see, I know that the bond, the 1 year, sold for $991.77. That's how I know that the one-year spot is 0.83%. That's how I know it, because that's the calculation that would make $991.77 times 1 plus that number equal $1,000, the face value. And I also know that $976.23 is what two-year treasuries are selling for now. In 2 years, they give you $1,000. The only way that could happen is if I took 976.23 times 1 plus 0.0122 times 1 plus 0.0122. In other words, 2 years of the same rate. But that's not what really happened. That $976.23, that can't be right. That just can't be right. Because I already know that the first rate was 0.83%, not 0.0122%. In other words, what really happened when the market said we are pricing a 2-year treasury bill at $976.23, that was really $976.23 times 1 plus 0.0083 the first year plus some other 1 plus for the second year. In other words, I can find the 1 year forward rate from the T-bill. The way they report these numbers, the way they're calculated, is simply assuming that the same interest rate happens every year that the instrument is alive. But that can't be true, because the market has already said that the yield on a 1 year treasury bill was 0.83%. So in order for this treasury bill to actually have a price, the 2 year, have a price of $976.23, and the first year's leg of it is 0.83%, the second year's leg would have to be something else. And I can calculate that if I want to. 1,000 divided by $976.23 times 1 plus 0.0083. That would give me 1 plus R1. So R1, the 1 year forward rate, would be 976.23 times 1.0083 minus 1. Now let me do that. and we'll talk about it. I want to get to the end zone. I don't want to keep flogging the math. I wanted to show you what this means. I'm going to take 1,000 divided by, open parenthesis, 976.23 times 1.0083, close the parentheses, minus 1, well, spank me, 1.59%. In other words, in order for the two-year treasury to have a price of $976.23, we could say one of two things. We could say that $976.23 times 1 plus 0.0122 to the second power equals 1,000. Or we could say 976.23 times 1 plus 0.0083 times 1 plus 0.0159. That would be the average. That would be the composite of the forward and the spot. In other words, what you have just seen me do there is to show you, I just teased out what the market thinks treasury bills are going to pay 1 year from now. If treasury bills are paying 0.83% now, that's a yield if you buy a treasury bill, then what the market is saying is that they're of the mind, it is their judgment, that treasury bills that are coming out 1 year from now are going to pay 1.59%. In other words, the market is saying that the rate will double in the next year. The rate, the yield on a 1 year treasury bill 1 year from now will be almost twice as much as it is right now. That's what that forward rate is telling you. We have just seen a brief and somewhat unclear window on the future. Now, let me ask you this. If you were to know interest rates, madam, you know interest rates. As interest rates go up, is that good for the economy or bad for the economy?
Depends on if you're lending or buying.
Just say overall, you're a business person. Do you want interest rates to go up so that you get money at a higher interest rate to floor plan, or do you want interest rates to be low? Not complicated. You can borrow money from me at 2%, or you can borrow money from me to put on buy your inventory at 10%. Which would you prefer to do? I'll do either one you want.
I'm sorry, I should not.
I know, right. What do you say?
Lower.
Exactly. If I have a choice between borrowing money at 2% and borrowing money at 10%, I would much rather borrow money at 2%. Okay? I walked up to this bread place. It said, "Our bread is delicious." The bread place beside it said, "Our bread tastes like ass." Okay? I got a choice. Good bread or ass bread? Yes, good bread. The kids try it. Mom's trying to go, "No, Mommy, I don't want to go in there. That bread tastes like butt." Shut up. There are kids starving in China who'd love to have a butt sandwich right about now. Okay? Okay, you see, the market is assessing that there's going to be a very bad time. Doubling of the short rate, that is scary. That's the kind of thing that is like, now, I'm going to take you on another journey. Part of today's lecture is showing you this theory of interest rates can be turned into practical, applicable, actionable plan. Let me clear this out, or let me take this off the table here for a moment. Now I'm going to take you to a place called the Federal Reserve, which I talked about in the second week. And you saw that cheesy video. Publishes a whole bunch of periodicals. But the three biggies are the Blue Book, the Green Book, and the Beige Book. Now, the one I'm going to show you right now is called the Beige Book. The Beige Book is done every month. Each of the 12 districts surveys business activity in its district. And it goes to the businesses. Okay, what kinds of investments are you making? What kind of hiring are you going to do? How are your revenues? What do you see for revenues happening? How is that going? They go to consumer groups, households, representatives. Okay, what's the outlook? Are you going to be buying for your house, remodeling, buy a new house? What are you going to be doing? And they go to political leaders in their respective districts. Okay, what do you see the budget consequences of being... What kinds of road projects, what kinds of things are happening as far as school buildings go? What kind of construction? Do you want to try to make jobs come to your area from other places? What are you hearing about that? All of that goes in district by district. And then each of the 12 districts reports their findings monthly to the Fed in Washington, D.C., and the Fed synthesizes those into the Beige Book. It starts with a national summary. Washington, D.C., what the Board of Governors sees happening. And then from there, it works its way through region by region what the regions are saying. Okay, so now let's look overall economic activity. Reports from the 12 Federal Reserve districts indicates that the economy continued to expand at a modest pace across most regions from late November through the end of the year. Now, you understand that everything that the Fed does will be understated, if at all possible. Okay? So remember that they are understating the issues involved here. Now, the first most important word in that first sentence, what would you surmise would be that most important word?
In the first sentence?
Yes. Reports, again, let me read it so that it's on the podcast. Reports from the 12 Federal Reserve districts indicated that the economy continued to expand at a modest pace across most regions from late November through the end of the year. One or the other. Make your choice.
Expand.
No. Modest. The word modest. Modest. Now, you know me. I'm an understated kind of guy. A veritable wallflower. My goodness. If I were to have written this, I would not have used the word modest. I would have said, hide your horses and hide your cats. This is coming to the zombie apocalypse. But they'll say modest because they're paid to be modest and quiet. You understand that the word modest here is a signal that things are not good. Modest. Okay, you were in combat with me. You stepped on a landmine. Your leg is over there. Well, you have a modest injury here, okay? Now, the next most important word, I'm going to let you have a chance to recover from having me yell in your head about hide your cats and hide your horse and all that kind of stuff. Okay, what's the other important word here? It's not expand. What's the other one?
Most.
Yes, most. Well, most of your body is cancer-free. And we ignore that nodule on your nose, okay? Understand that they are understating concern. And I'm trying to teach you how to read the tea leaves, read the signals. The Federal Reserve is not in the business of scaring the hell out of the economy, of spooking things. But it is in the business of trying to give you the information that you need to have to move forward. Okay? So in this case, they are using understated language to warn of problems that are coming. The reports from the 12th Federal Reserve districts indicated that the economy continued to expand at a modest pace across most regions from late November. From most regions. Well, there's a problem. You see, because, okay, most regions, that is leaving a lot of vagueness. Okay, it's expanding in most regions. Okay, most of the United States is uninhabited. So maybe it's expanding in all those uninhabited places. It just so happens that there are a few modest places where it's not doing so well, you know, like the whole East Coast and the whole southern half of California. Okay, so I'm trying to point out here that what I told you before, what I showed you as far as the market sentiments about forward rates, about interest rates that are coming. And by the way, if I did the three-year rate, I could do a three-year rate too. And that one would be pretty spectacular, but it's even higher. The three-year rate is over 2%. That third, that forward rate, if I did the three-year one, it was, remember, the spot was 0.83%. Forward one was 1.59%. The second forward, if I use those two, the 0.83% and the 1.59%, to find the third year, the forward rate 2 years out, that one is over 2%. So we've got a serious issue coming up. And it's your problem because this is going to come right when you're graduating. that was insensitive. Employment. Labor markets were reported to be tight or tightening during the period. Employment growth ranged from slight to moderate. And most districts indicated that wages increased modestly. There's that word modestly again. I'll bet they have two shower curtains. They're so modest. See that word modestly? I'm trying to show you how to read. I don't necessarily want you to be a cynical bastards like I am, but at the same, yeah, I do. But at the same time, I want you to know that their language is understated, but they're trying to signal that employment growth ranged from slight to moderate. Now let's go to the next question. See if you know this one. I don't know if you've been taught this. You should have been taught this, madam. How many jobs should the U.S. economy create, new jobs, every month in order for the economy to expand at a healthy rate? You don't know. I'm not even going to guess that one. That's like someone said, you can have $100 if you can guess how many little Valentine kisses were in this giant jar. I didn't even try, you know. Just give it to me. I'll eat them and I'll tell you after I'm finished. You got an idea? Any guess? How many jobs the U.S. economy has to create?
Maybe more jobs than.
Give me a number. You want to try? Okay, that was a shot. It's wrong, but that's a shot. Believe it or not, the number ranges, but on the low end, 135,000 jobs have to be generated each month. Now, I'm not really all that happy if I see below 150, 165,000. Those are numbers that I'm more comfortable with, but there are some who say, well, at least 135,000. And it's all over the place, but it is a lot of jobs just to keep the U.S. economy growing, just to keep the U.S. economy growing at a healthy rate. So when they say slight to modest job expansion, that scares me as much as that first sentence in the first paragraph goes, because we're not generating enough jobs, creating enough jobs to keep the economy going. So and then pricing pressure intensified somewhat since the last report. There is the warning that inflation is coming. We are starting to see inflation. Now, I reported last week on my Twitter pages, my economics Twitter pages, that I was calling for a recession in the third quarter to fourth quarter. This yesterday, I reported on Dark Economics, on Pulp Economics, I gave the definition of inflation. On Dark Economics, I forecast that inflation will accelerate rather substantially over the next year. In other words, we're going to have inflation. The Fed's going to crank down on the money supply, which will cause interest rates to go up, and will drop into a fairly strong recession where there will be jobs will just vanish. We will not have job growth, and we will be in a serious problem for a couple of years. And that, again, I should emphasize, you will be going out there to get jobs right about in the depth of this. Go. Oh, no, go down and you'll see them. Yeah, and that's the one thing I like. It's interesting, too, because you'll notice that, okay, the Federal Reserve has, there are two things that go on. Each Federal Reserve has its own character. Like, for example, the St. Louis Fed has a very different character from the Chicago Fed, in the sense of how they want to reach out to the community, how they want to interact with the region around them. To give you an example, when we went down to the St. Louis Fed, they just rolled out the red carpet for us. It was gorgeous. I mean, they had very high-level officials of the St. Louis Fed speak to my students. They spent the whole morning with my group. It was about 40 students talking about different things at the Fed. They were always throwing jobs and internships at my students, and my students didn't want it because, oh, that's St. Louis. I want to be in Chicago. Anyway, the Federal Reserve, they were pointing out, look, you work for us, we pay for your education clear through your PhD, and you have all this data, you can do anything you want with it. We got all kinds of great programs. They have education, economic research, working with the community of businesses to see what they need, what can be done for them. Great stuff. St. Louis Fed, really open, really outreach. Contrast that with the Chicago Fed. I went up there with my students. They just wanted to see, Chicago Fed has this display room where you can see actual things like a big pile of $1 million, and you can see money being shredded, you can see different informational placards about the Fed. And so we went into this Chicago Fed, and they herded us all into this small room. And then there was this corridor of metal detectors, and they had the security guard, this big woman, and she was just watching us like a hawk, and I had my students go through first, and I was back behind him. She hit me on the knuckles with the nightstick. You know, ow, damn, bitch, what'd you do that for? No, seriously, I was bleeding, and it turned out after I got to know her, great, had a meal together, wonderful lady. That gun belt was something to die for. I mean, you know, who knew that they would carry Glocks? But anyway, very unfriendly, very closed, very paranoid about people. You're from the outside coming in here. What do you want of us? So you got to understand that there are different characters to the Fed. And also, as time goes on, the Fed's chairman and its governors cast a flavor on the Fed. So, for example, going back to tall Paul Volcker, he was 6'4". Big, smoked cigar, blew the cigar smoke in your face. He hated everyone. He was a cynical, mean son of a bitch. Greatest Fed chairman you'd ever want to meet. Then you came to the era of Alan Greenspan. He started out as a very accommodating, friendly man, but mentally he turned really nasty over the years. Ben Bernanke, very scholarly, very open. Debate was everything to Bernanke. He was very politically sensitive. He was a kiss-ass to George W. Bush, president. He was a kiss-ass to Barack Obama as president. And then we came to the new chairwoman, Janet Yellen. She is very cold, very practical. She wants actionable information. Greenspan, he looked at numbers all the time. He was driven by numbers, not by sentiment. Bernanke was driven a lot more by sentiment than by numbers. Yellen is somewhere in another dimension completely. It's the numbers and how they fit into a broad model of the economy in her mind. Very different. So you'll see all these different things playing in the beige book. So know that. Okay, so now I'm going to kill that, and I'm going to take you to the next thing that we're going to talk about here. Get all this nonsense off the board here. I'm going to try to find someone. Who can help me out with something important that I need to know. Mother's work is never done here. We're going to go back to that car you want. You know you want a car. You really do. Okay? Now we've got to figure out what car. I'll pick on you one more time. What car do you want? Not. Don't go ridiculous on me. Something that's nice. You don't know. You got what you want? Okay. We got to get your ambitions up here, folks. You know, you're going to be making money. You got to go out there and start drooling over something like an Audi or maybe something. Not one of those. What's that one, the Soul or the Nef? I mean, don't they recall for ugly? Seriously, what car? Give me a car. Okay. Not top of the line, but it's good. Okay, good. Okay, BMW 645. Let's see what that thing. The last class, someone said, I want a Corvette. Yeah, a car you can drive 3 months a year. Oh, there's ice. Why is my nose spinning around? Okay. Okay, BMW 645. BMW 645. Oh, doesn't even give me a price. Ouch. Is there a... That's a used one. I want a new one. No. Okay, give me another car. I need a car.
Toyota Tundra.
A Toyota Tundra. Ooh, there's a butch car. You know, I'm always worried about cars that are named after places you go to die. You ever think about that? No, seriously. Of course, I should talk. I've got a Mitsubishi Outlander. Okay, $3,120. Okay, $30,120. Now, the first thing that we're going to want to do here is going to show you how to do a payment. And I'm going to use the Pearson calculator. And you can download this for your iPhone or your Android. There's a free version, and then there's also a paid version. I got the paid version, $399 and all that. But here's how we would do it. Let's say that we get a five-year loan. Let's do a five-year APR is, let's say, 5.79%. And we're going to say this car, let's say we were, actually, that's not too bad. That's a nice, okay, this truck is 3120. Let's say out the door. We do a lot of negotiating and haggling, and we go out the door, OTD, $3,500. Tax and title, you drive it away. 100% loan, we're going to borrow the whole nine yards for this car. Okay, so let's work out the numbers. That is pretty. That is a nice truck. But okay. So I'm going to go 60 months is going to be the N. Now, 5.79 divided by 12 is the interest rate. Now, the present value, the price value, is $3,500. And don't forget to give it a negative sign. That's just it's annoying. You have to do that with present value. And that's your present value. Now, all you have to do is say compute the payment, and there you go, $586.68 a month. Okay, that's great. Now the next step that I want to do, and certainly you can do this, there's formulas, the book gives you formulas, but I mean the calculator is so fast at doing this, it's ridiculous. The next thing that we would probably want to do here, if we were financially planning, we would ask ourselves, okay, when can I flip this car? Okay, and be right side up. The term upside down means that the balance on the loan is greater than the asset value, the market value of the asset. Upside down means that the balance on the loan is greater than the market value of the asset. Right side up means that the market value of the asset is more than what you owe on it. So what we're trying to do is find out when we are right side up on this loan. So we're going to look at year and resale value. Now, there are a number of sites that can give you this. They do this. As a matter of fact, I went to them when I was researching for my car. At 1 year, this car is going to have a resale value of $44,800. At year two, it will drop to $39,100. Year three, it begins to hold its value better, $35,800. Year four, $32,900, and year five at about $29,750. So if we have research and we see that this is the projection for the resale value, let's see what we can find out. You hit this button right here. See this? AMORT, AMORT. That's your amortization. And what it's going to do for you is show you the balance, the principal, and the interest month by month. So let's go out 12 months. The balance on the loan is $25,000. The resale value is $40,000. So you are right side up a year out. Let's go out 24 months. $19,000. You see that you are right side up on this loan. Because this truck holds its value so well, This would be the kind of vehicle you could trade in every couple of years and have enough to buy a new vehicle with less money than you paid for the first one. We try to do it in such a way that we advise people to buy a vehicle that holds its value and also to pay it off aggressively enough that you can flip the vehicle within 2 or 3 years. And over a period of, let's say, 10 years, you would get to the point where you can buy your new cars every 2 or 3 years out of your checking account instead of with loans. That's the whole plan when we do this kind of stuff is, okay, we want you to hold this truck for 2 years, and then we'll flip it. You're going to owe 19 on it. Okay. And all that good stuff. You follow? Now, let's do another one. Year zero, $18,500 on a 60-month with an APR of 5.19%. Year one, two, three, four, five. It's worth $14,000 at year one. It's worth $12,200 at year two. It's worth $10,500 at year three. And I can't remember year four, but I don't need to. And it's worth $9,000 flat at year four. I can't remember year three. This is my car, by the way. Watch. Now, what we're going to do first to kick this off, let me back this down here. Okay, so reset, always reset, and I should have done that the last time. 60 months, whoops, N, 60 months. So now we do 5.19 divided by 12 equals, that's your, and then your present value was 18.5 out the door, pause neg, present value. Compute the payment, $350.73 a month. Now, let's look at the amortization table. And I'll have to expand this so you can see it better. Okay. 12 months out, I owe $15,000 on the car, and my resale is $14,000. I'm upside down. Do you see it? Do you see how I'm upside down on the loan? I borrowed, I still owe $15,000 on the loan in 12 months. I can sell it for $14,000. The market value of the vehicle is $14,000. So I am upside down. I can't sell it without losing. So now let's go out to 24 months. I still owe $11,600 and change, and the car is worth $12,000. Am I upside down or right side up? Right side up. Good. And now that means that I can actually sell the car or trade it, but I probably trade in. They're going to try to screw me on that. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to say, all right, let's look at the optimal, which is 3 years. At that time, I'm a little under $8,000 I owe, and the vehicle has $10,500. So I have equity in the car at this point of about $2,500. Do you see that? So what that means is that I could probably, it would be best at the best for me. Usually the 3-year mark is for normal cars. I go back into the dealer and I can take, okay, another car, let's say I get one at $19,000. I got $2,500 in equity that can go toward my next car. So this time I am going in there with a $16,500 loan. Not an $18,500 loan. You see how over a period of 10, 15 years, you can buy a nicer car every year, a little bit nicer, and have a little bit less of a loan every time you do it, to the point where if you plan this right with people and they don't get greedy and try to get a car too soon, 3 years is about the best place. I mean, after about five cars, you've got maybe you have to pay $3,000-$4,000 for a $25,000 car, which isn't bad. One last thing to show you. Oh, just out of curiosity, look at 48 months. 4,000 and the vehicle is 9,000. So if I can hold my water for 4 years, I've got equity in this car of close to $5,000. Do you see what I mean by equity in the car? The debt plus the equity equals total value. I could sell this car for 9,000 and I would pay off for a little 4,000 and change. I've got 5,000 toward my next car, which means I could get a nicer car, a little nicer than just the same car jacked up in price a little bit. It's your call, though, how often you want to change cars. Most people say 36 to 48 months because that's about when your warranties are starting to expire and the car is beginning to need more attention. There you go. Give it to, that way you can sell it to the dealership and the dealership can sell it to some loser. Or something like that. Now, the next thing, last thing that I want to show you here, really quickly, and I won't do the whole nine yards of it, but I'm going to show you an Excel spreadsheet. Watch. Okay. Real quick, month, and you might want to write these formulas down as I do them. Balance. Payment, interest, and principal, now over here I'm going to put loan amount, number of years, number of months, make it a little easier. And APR. Now watch what I'm going to do here. I'm going to put the loan amount right here. And I'm going to give you, if you know Excel, you know what I'm doing. If you don't know Excel, this is kind of useful information for you. We're going to make an Excel amortization table. Now, there are some benefits to doing this, especially if you're a wealth manager. You're talking to your clients, showing them a stupid calculator. Well, look at this amortization. Is not the same as showing them a spreadsheet or actually even download it. And also, watch the flexibility. I'm going to put in my loan amount here. $18,500, okay? Matter of fact, I'm going to put it in as a dollar amount. Dollar, $18,500. Number of months, 60 months, and the APR, 5.19%. Okay, so now I'm going to go month one, month two. Now watch how I play this. Okay, now the balance, it starts with equals that. See, what I'm doing is I'm putting the core information over to the side so that I can change it and make an amortization table customized to whatever I want. Now, the payment amount is going to be equal to PMT times the rate, the APR. But before I say divided by 12, I'm going to do something here. If I hit the F4 key, do you see those dollar signs? That makes what we call an absolute reference. so that as I copy and paste down the line, it stays on that number. That piece of the formula will not go anywhere. Divided by 12, comma, the present value right there, and I'm going to do that F4 trick again to make it an absolute reference so it doesn't change as I copy the formula. And then I can just close the parentheses. Watch. Does it work? What did I do wrong? Oh, the number of periods. I forgot to put in the number of periods. I'm just testing you here. Okay, the number of periods. Right there, comma, and then back up. Right there, 60. And that's going to be an absolute reference as well. There you go. Now, the interest on it is going to be that APR, whoops, F4 divided by 12, whoops, interest, equals the APR divided by 12 times the loan balance. Okay? And the principal will be, they make that number a negative, which kind of bothers me, but I don't know, I think I'm going to go back and make that a negative, just so it comes out as a positive. And the principal is going to be my payment equals that minus my interest, that. So I put $270 down towards the principal. Now watch what I do here. This number is going to equal this minus what I paid on the principal in the last period. And then I'm going to copy these down and watch what I do here. Oops. I shouldn't have. I screwed up one thing here. Whoops. 60. Yep. Interest. Oh, wait. Yeah, that's right. Okay. Oh, the interest. I should have done the absolute reference there. I screwed that up. Why is that behaving like a butt? Oh, I2. Oh, no, not B2. I2 is the, sorry about that. Now you can copy down this formula. Hang on here. I screwed up there. There you go. And I got one more payment to do right here. There. So if you want to write down the formulas, there's the first one, second one, third one, and fourth one. Okay, that's all I have for you tonight. I thank you.